Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb Tuesday edition. Glad you can be with us here on Sports Map Radio. Hey, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. I do want to mention the segment brought to you by Total Wine & More. With the lowest prices for over 30 years, you'll love what you find at Total Wine & More. Check out TotalWine.com today. Drink responsibly, B21. All right, let's get the good of the day.
Good of the day might be a little bittersweet, but, you know, sometimes the good of the day has to be that way because we're going to be celebrating a career and one of the last greats to do it. And that was Pat Sajak, who confirmed yesterday that this next season will be his last as host of Wheel of Fortune.
I know. That is so awesome. Now, I do want to do this later in the show.
Yeah.
Eitan Shander had a great question. Who's on the Mount Rushmore
he did.
Of game show hosts? And he had Bob Barker, Pat Sajak, and Alex Trebek. He's looking for the fourth. And I thought, that's a fun conversation to have with people.
It is,
right? Because if you're a game show nut like I am, it's there's a whole bunch of people to choose from. But how do we put Pat Sajak like Pat Sajak's career, like, how, what do we think about it? Like, what do we make of it? It's kind of the same thing, but it's culturally impactful, right?
It to me,
like, Wheel of Fortune is one of the Smithsonian Museum game shows of
right.
all time, right? Would you say that?
It's there with Jeopardy.
Right.
I mean, for years and years and years. I mean, those are the only two that I can think of that have been syndicated, like, near prime time.
And would you say that it is a better game? Because a lot of people watch Jeopardy, but a lot of people are like, I don't know who was the emperor of the Byzantine Empire.
Yeah.
Golly.
This
but
is, I, mean,
but I can certainly do Hangman. Yeah.
Although in the last couple of years now, the last season, because I mean, I'm not ashamed. I watch it every single day because I put on the news and then the news rolls right into Wheel of Fortune.
What
and
is
then,
this, 1986? I mean,
I
my goodness.
Swear
you
to
watch
God,
the
I do.
News and then game
I
shows?
Do. I do.
That's
I
awesome.
Have, well, because usually I'm helping cook dinner and stuff, so it's on yeah. in the background. But Wheel of Fortune comes on, and we actually sit there. We, you know, we kind of gravitate towards it. And we still try to guess the puzzles and stuff like that. I will say this. The puzzles have gotten weirder.
Weird, yeah. Well, how many puzzles can you?
I mean, it's like
you think it would be endless with the English language. There's only so many work in the formula that they have.
Yeah, but it's like they are making stuff up just to put it in there. It's like it's not a it's not a common phrase whatever they're putting up there, but it's there. You see it. It's like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
How's anyone supposed to know that?
He has withstood the changes to that game. And the two biggest changes to me in Wheel of Fortune, some people might find it different given the prizes and the $1 million wedge. But I think the two biggest changes to me on Wheel of Fortune were when I was a kid, you used to buy stuff.
Yep. I was hoping you were going to say that.
You went shopping.
Now I'm curious what the other one is. So.
Right. The other one, I think the other one was in the bonus round. They gave you the five letters.
Yes.
For a long time, everyone was guessing anyway. So they finally went, these are the common letters. We've got to create puzzles where these letters we're going to give them, but that doesn't give the puzzle away so that we can get some more letters and some more, because people want to, they want to guess A, but they can't, they got to put,
well,
they got to guess
know, and
E.
It's, and honestly,
so they go, all right, we'll give it to you.
And honestly, it's changed my way of thinking too, because
yeah.
I can't help but think R, S, T, N, L, and E are the most used letters in the English language.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know
that's
if
right.
that's true or not.
I don't know if that's true, but it was after a while they noticed that these are the letters everyone's taking.
Yeah.
Like there's no when we ask these people to pick the letters and the vowel, they're all doing so let's change it so we get some so we give equal time to the other letters of the alphabet so that they can be part of
it. And
this.
Why is it why do we I recited that right there and you didn't even bat an eye like, oh no, I always went L N R S.
Yeah, no.
You know, it's like
yeah.
no, it's R S T L N E.
That's right.
I mean,
well,
it's just
yes.
the way you say it.
That's right. And so that's what they've that's what the two now again, they've altered the game in a bunch of ways, but
I think, I think you're right. I think those are the two biggest ones.
I used to love it when they went shopping. Are you kidding? That was so fun.
Yeah.
The ceramic Dalmatian. I mean, how awesome is that?
I'll take the pots and pans for $400.
Yeah. I'll get the hot tub. My thing was the hot tub. Who gets to buy the hot tub? How great is that? Yeah.
You know, it was always themed. Sometimes it was kitchen. Sometimes it was
right.
have your home theater. Look at all the home theater things we have for you.
And then they would always say afterwards, and the rest you want on a gift certificate on or on an account. I'll take gift certificate, please.
Yep.
They weren't going to risk that bad boy in the next round with bankrupt. No. So, yeah, congratulations, Pat Sajak.
Yeah.
All right, what is the bad of the day?
I actually have two.
Oh, two. Okay.
I have two. One is more local than the other, but it's global at the same time. But the first bad of the day is that Texas, the Longhorns of baseball, lost in a walk-off yesterday after Stanford's Drew Bowser hit a routine pop fly to right field. And Texas's right fielder Dylan Campbell lost it in the lights.
Oh, how horrifying!
It's you watch the video. He couldn't find it. He just had no clue where it was. The second baseman is running out there as fast as he can. He is yelling at him where it is, and he's putting his arms up like, I don't see it at all. And then the moment the ball hits the ground, I mean, they just needed one run because it was a tied game. Moment the ball hits the ground, I mean, that right fielder just collapsed onto the field. He was just, I mean, devastated.
Oh, my God.
It was a routine pop-up. So Stanford now moves on to the Super Regional. Texas is done.
What in everyday life can you equate that to?
I have no idea.
I can't think of something where the moment of panic hits.
It could have been a time when I was working for this ad agency and I sent the wrong invoice to another company.
Oh, well, okay.
That one kind of did it. And I didn't realize it at the time until emails came back and was like, this isn't for us.
It was
like a competitor too.
Like, I'm trying to think of filling it. I can't like the moment he's running, the ball is hit and he's running and then he realizes I can't see it.
I lost it.
And then his brain processes. And if this hits the ground, we lose.
Yeah. No, like, I mean, it's literally like he's looking. I think he's hoping because the second baseman sees it and he is running his, you know what, off to get out there.
Right.
And just can't get there in time. And the ball just drops and you see the ball just, you know, hits the ground and does that little half hop. And it's done. And you just see them.
So
they just, I mean, I don't even know if they pick up the ball, really.
Oh, yeah, you don't.
Stanford is running all over the place because they just need that one run to come across. They're tackling the guy. I mean, it's complete euphoria for Stanford. Texas is, it's heartbreaking.
Trip to Omaha on the line.
Yeah.
Falls apart. That's awful. All right, what's the second
one? So real quick, the second bad of the day is Houston. Here in Houston, we're experiencing a heat wave. Right. And the temperatures are only getting hotter. I'm hoping it's fixed today. But at Bush Airport, which is one of the main airports, Houston has two airports. It's the larger one, the main airport for Houston. The AC went out in the terminal.
Oh, no.
And I couldn't. I laughed at the story when I first read it because it got up to 80 degrees inside the terminal. And all I could think about is no one's ever really in a good mood. I mean, you're in a good mood if you're traveling and you're going to a vacation, you're excited. But there's stress. There is just, you know, people for days. And then all of a sudden, if there's no AC, I can't imagine. I'm surprised that I didn't hear about, hey, you know, and five people died today at George Bush Intercontinental Airport.
On one of my recent travels, I think I was in Orlando, one of my recent trips, and my wife and I were waiting to get into security, and there was one lady, TSA agent, and the only thing she did the entire time was yell, choose a side, and Captain, and she was just yelling instructions on where to go, like you go left or right, and that's all she did. The entire time was yell this order at people.
Ugh.
And I was getting so aggravated. I was tired and I just wanted to get through security. And it was just this constant woman yelling out the same thing over and over again. And I thought, is that really her job? Is that her job? Was she on yelling duty today? Did they go, somebody needs to yell? We got that. Marsha, do you got that? Okay, Marsha's got it. She's going to yell for 4 hours, and then we're going to move her to a scan. Like, so imagine that with no air conditioning and just sweating and hot and gross. Yeah, yeah. Plus the, yeah, I lost my luggage and they don't know where it is.
Yep.
Or the flight's been delayed and we can't get you to your other plane on time in Dallas.
You're going to miss your connecting flight.
You're going to miss your connecting flight because this plane is delayed. Or we've changed gates and now you've got to run all the way across that way.
A thousand things.
Oh, Lord.
And then,
that was one of the best reality shows. I think Southwest had a reality show once.
Did they really?
Where they were showing people, ticket agents and people just screaming at them at the top of their lungs.
And then just imagine now you turn the temperature up a little bit. So it's 80 degrees inside the terminal.
Horrific. All right, the dumb is coming up next as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we're continuing the good, the bad, and the dumb. Good morning to you. Thanks for joining us here on Wake Up Call again on the on the morning after the Denver Nuggets have won the NBA championship. And on the eve of the Golden Knights possibly winning the Stanley Cup tonight. It's game five in the Cup Finals. The Golden Knights and the Florida Panthers. All right, let's get the dumb of the day.
The dumb of the day. I did have one that I think now it'd probably be better if we wait to see how it plays out.
Okay.
So I'm putting that dumb on the back burner. Instead, we're going to use the other one, and that is that you know that merger that we talked about a little bit about last week?
The LIV PGA Tour merger?
Yeah, it seems to be somewhat in danger.
Oh, Dan Lust tell us this
last week? That this could be happening.
Yeah.
Senator, I had the senator's name right here. I want to make sure to get it right. Senator Richard Blumenthal.
Blumenthal, yeah.
Who's a Democrat from Connecticut, is launching an investigation because there's a lot of irregularities, if we could say that word. Because, you know, these two were at odds and, you know, brought up all this litigation against each other. And now that's just kind of wiped away.
Yeah.
You know, just magically overnight, in a blink of an eye, poof, it's gone. And so he's launching an investigation. And because, I mean, with this merger, it does kind of create a monopoly.
Do we think I just want to think about this, that the PGA Tour books are pretty bad. For a nonprofit, they're pretty bad. Because now they're going to be for-profit.
Well,
they were nonprofit before. And when you look into nonprofits, sometimes you go, whew, okay. That doesn't work out accounting-wise.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, well, that's now it's... Richard Blumenthal says, you know, all the records, everything needs to be brought to him by June 26th.
Oh, boy.
And I know that one of the things they keep bringing up, too, is like, the Saudis have a history of human rights violations. And he's like, you know what? Okay, that just wipe away. I think for me, that's low-hanging fruit to kind of keep griping to that. Yes, they did a lot of atrocities, and they continue to do a lot of atrocities. But I think the more important thing here is looking at, like you just said, it's the financial... the financials of the PGA Tour.
Which Phil had always kind of thought were murky. Phil was the one that was kind of saying, hey, you know what? They act like they have no money. They have money. And they have money, and it's going to the wrong people. And that's why
Greg
Norman was noticing this, too. Greg Norman was on that bandwagon for a while when he was trying to say, hey, look, I think that this isn't as on the up and up as people think it is. And there's a lot of, you know what it is? It reminds me of like, a bowl games. Everybody gets rich off bowl games,
yep.
But nobody knows what, you know, and it's supposed to be a nonprofit bowl game. And yet everybody got rich off of it. Guys making $500,000 a year, organizing one football game. You know, but Jay Monahan's probably making $20 million a year. Something crazy like that running the PGA Tour.
Yeah. Nonprofit.
For a nonprofit. Exactly. But, This U.S. Open this week is coming at a time where it's kind of interesting because if we had this announcement, like let's say after the British Open, where they waited until all the majors were done, and so there was nothing on the immediate path that intersected PGA golfers and LIV golfers together, then there would be enough time to sort of separate the guys and you know, let them speak on their mind to the media. But it was last week, and then this week you're thrusting the two organizations kind of together, the LIV golfers that have U.S. Open exemptions, and they're coming in, and it's going to create a real media mess.
Oh, not only that.
You know what I mean?
Hey, because the USGA is the one that runs the Open, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're doing it right, by the way. Did you see one of the pairings?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. But
Koepka,
yeah,
Koepka and Rory?
That's right. Rory and Koepka was one of the pairings, right, yeah.
Ah, God bless you, USGA. Maybe it's just them looking at it like, you know, let's just get it over with right now. Just get it out of the way.
Exactly. By the way, I was reading a little bit on the Los Angeles Country Club, and it's right smack in the heart of, like, downtown L.A. Yeah. It's like, you know, right in – and they estimate the guy – one of the questions that came up they asked a real estate guy in Los Angeles, and they said, how much is that land worth? And they said billions.
Yeah.
Billions of dollars. It is prime real estate, and it's a golf course. It's a golf course. Like, think about the $1 million houses that you could put on this property. It's
just
nuts.
Think of the $1 million houses
surrounding the property. If, like, somebody could buy it and tear down the golf course and just put up mansions, it would be insane.
Yep.
Because it's two golf courses. There's a south course and there's a north course. It's a lot of land. A lot of land just sitting there for golf. So, I think it's going to be great. I think this U.S. Open is going to be really fun to watch.
It's going to be entertaining.
I do too.
I'm excited
to
see
about this course.
You know, the two things I'm excited about is that 11th hole. Because, I mean, I'm just assuming right now everyone's parring it, right?
With the 11th hole?
Yeah.
If not bogeying it, yeah.
It's just the only thing I can think of.
290 yards, yeah.
It's a long par three. I don't even know how you got that in the books. But the other one is I can't wait to see what happens when somebody hits their ball in the rough.
Yeah. This course is it's got five par threes, which is really cool because par threes, they're really exciting. And they can range from 290, as you said. There's one hole that can be 80. This is one of those old school courses, and you can find these courses scattered around that were built like at the turn of the century and kind of modified. But there was a time where golf courses wanted to get a lot of like bang out of the buck, so they would create multiple tees so the holes could play at certain distances. So, and I'm not talking like when you get to a normal hole in golf, it's like, well, today it plays 455. Tomorrow it plays 425, and then Friday it's going to play 485, where it's just moving the tees up and down, but it doesn't change anything about the hole other than it might be a little closer, you might be a little further back. But the way they designed the LA Country Club is that some of these holes are like, well, the tee box is way over there, and it becomes a 280-yard, you know, par three, or you can tee off over here, and it becomes a 330-yard par four. Like, they can manipulate the holes for all sorts of cool things. Now, they're going to keep it standard, meaning the par isn't going to change. So if they're taking the 11th hole, for example, and making it a 290 par 3, that'll stay a par 3 throughout the tournament. They're not going to use the back tees and make it a 340 par 4. But the course at least allows the options to do that. So one of the holes, one of the par 3s is going to be 80 yards. 80 yards, a tricky, very small green, 80-yard par 3, like a pitch and putt course, but it's dangerous around it. So it's going to be cool. It's going to be neat to see what they can trick up during this tournament. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. And plus, it's a new venue. If you follow golf, they go to Wingfoot every now and then. They go to Pebble Beach every now and then. They go to these courses every now. But this is the first time that this course has ever hosted a U.S. Open. It's going to be like Erin Hills and Chalmers Bay. Chambers Bay was in Washington. So it'll be really very, very cool. All right, real quick, let's get back to the question we were asking about game show hosts, because Philip said that Richard Dawson is one that should be mentioned in the Mount Rushmore of game show hosts. So
I seem to remember mentioning that one last night as well.
I think you mentioned that as well. Yeah, I think you did on Twitter last night.
The original Kissing Bandit.
So Eitan Shander, our good friend, posted on Twitter last night, who's on the route Mount Rushmore of game show hosts? And he already had three, Alex Trebek, Pat Sajak, and Bob Barker. Looking for the fourth. I mentioned to him Wink Martindale and Gene Rayburn.
Yeah.
But Richard Dawson is certainly a good one.
I do like Gene. Now, Wink was Wink the one? Who was the one that did the Newlywed Game?
Goodness gracious. Who did the Newlywed Game?
Because
Bob Fairbanks? Was it Bob Fairbanks?
No. Bob Eubanks.
Bob Eubanks, Fairbanks. What am I saying?
Yeah, Eubanks.
Bob Eubanks, yeah.
The only reason why I bring him up, because I seem to, my memory could be bad, you know, it's been years, but I seem to remember him hosting a lot of game shows.
Yeah, yeah. Wink Martindale hosted a few of them, too. I think Bob Eubanks is, he's got to be up there, too. Is Chuck Woolery considered?
I guess.
On the game show
I think you kind of have to.
Thing. Remember, there was a guy named Jim Perry that hosted Card Sharks and a couple of other ones.
Yeah.
But there was, to me, like, when I found out the background, when I was a kid, I thought game show host was just a job, like any other job. Like, you went to college to be an engineer, and you also just became a game show host. You find out they're, like, they're DJs, or they were personalities on TV, and they just got into the business because they were in L.A. at a time where a game show host needed a host. And, like, hey, news anchor Jim is pretty good. He seems to be good with people. Does he want to do this on the side? And that's how most of them got their start. But, like, Jim Perry looked like he was built in a game show host lab, like Wink Martindale. It just felt like these guys were, like, built for that sort of structure. But Richard Dawson, I looked at him as, like, an actor that became a game show host. Like, he's on Hogan's Heroes and a couple of things. But
maybe he
really owned Family Feud, man.
He did.
Nobody else did Family Feud. Nobody else could do Family Feud like him. And he got away with kissing people's wives in front of husbands.
Daughters.
And daughters, too. Like, how crazy is that?
I mean, he kissed everybody.
I want to continue this conversation next. All right. As we continue, it's Wake Up Call.